Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe unseres Finance Forward Podcastes. Dieses Mal fast schon wieder eine Sonderausgabe. Ich werde nämlich gleich an meinen Kollegen Philipp Westermeier, den OMR-Gründer, verweisen. Der hat auf der Next Conference in Hamburg auf der Reeperbahn Joseph Lubin getroffen, dem Ethereum-Mitgründer, und eigentlich neben Vitalik Buterin, dem Ethereum-Gründer, das bekannteste Gesicht in der Kryptowelt. Bei Bitcoin weiß man ja bis heute nicht, wer es erfunden hat. Und Lubin, merkt man, der ist so weg von diesem Krypto-Spekulationsthema und arbeitet eigentlich daran, die Weichen zu stellen für das Web 3.0. Darum geht es auch in diesem Interview, also darüber, wie wir künftig zusammen arbeiten und kommunizieren werden, wie das eben auf der neuen Blockchain-Technologie funktionieren kann, und natürlich werden die beiden auch darüber sprechen, was es mit Consensus auf sich hat, wo es darum geht, mit über 1000 Mann und Frau weltweit vernetzt, ja, neue Projekte zu bauen auf eben dieser Blockchain. Ganz spannendes Interview. Ich wünsche euch viel Spaß damit.
Maybe you can say a few words. I mean, you're known as one of the guys behind Ethereum and Ether and the whole platform and Consensus. What did you do before that? What's your background? How did it all start for you?
Technologist after I graduated.
Princeton.
I did about 10 years of robotics, machine vision, and AI research.
As an entrepreneur?
As a researcher.
At a university?
5 years at Princeton, and then with a small robotics research company.
And then you left that company and you saw that whole crypto and blockchain thing starting?
No, this was 100 years ago.
Okay, and then what?
So I moved on and used some of the same technologies in the music space, built automated music composition tools for about 3 years, and then just started building more generic software systems as often a software consultant. Ran a couple different consulting companies, eventually spent time at Goldman Sachs on the IT side of private wealth management. After that, I transitioned to the world of finance and built trading systems and ran a hedge fund with a partner. And
you founded that hedge fund?
Yep.
Ah, okay. And then when was the moment when you left this all this?
So did that successfully for a while, and then built other automated trading systems, and financial crisis hit, and disappointed in or disenchanted with the state of the financial world, geopolitics, etc. And so essentially stopped trading and ended up moving to Jamaica and spending time somewhat at the beach and somewhat in the music industry. So I was helping a friend with her music career.
Okay. And then when did you step back into the business?
So it was there that I read, in early 2011, I encountered the Bitcoin white paper. So I got very excited about that. It sort of snapped me from a disappointed or pessimistic frame of mind into a much more optimistic frame, where I felt like all of the broken systems, broken monetary systems, governance systems, etc., maybe not broken, but not serving people very well, monetary systems that were looking like they were end-of-lifing. Average lifetime of a monetary system throughout history is about 70 years, and it looked like central banks were going to – there was just so much debt in the system compared to money. Looked like central banks were going to continually devalue their state-issued currencies so that we could pay back the debt with devalued money. So that was the good scenario. The bad scenario would be that some sort of nonlinear collapse, cascade, would cause a contagion, things would get very bad for a while. Even in the good scenario, which we're in, sort of a slow cascading collapse, growth is retarded significantly because money's ill-used. And so that was the scenario that I thought we were in. And there were some optimistic possibilities, like if we built free energy systems or instantaneous teleportation or something like that, we could have a growth driver that could bring us out of this malaise. And turns out that blockchain is not quite as powerful as free energy systems, but is an engine that I think can enable us to build alternative infrastructure, much better architected foundations for information systems, and enable us to eventually grow our way out of the slowly cascading, collapsing financial system.
Let's go back to your story. So you're sitting there in Jamaica, you noticed that, you read that, you thought about that, and then you moved to New York and started to be part of this industry.
I'd been living in New York for a long time and spent a while in Jamaica, and so it was the Ethereum project started towards the end of my time in Jamaica. I couldn't really stay there anymore because I was involved 24/7, 365 with Ethereum, and wasn't a place where you could get high intensity technology work done. So I moved out of Jamaica
and how did you
spend a bunch of time in Switzerland and other places like New York.
And how did you get the initial link to Ethereum? How did you get the founders?
So I grew up in Toronto. Vitalik Buterin, the inventor of Ethereum, grew up in Toronto, and another founder of Ethereum grew up in Toronto. And so I spoke with that other person who said that Vitalik was Vitalik had written a white paper describing a remarkable new system, and I'd been aware of Vitalik because I read everything in the space for quite a long time, and I knew that he was, despite his young age, he was 19 at the time, I knew that he was a really great writer, a really thoughtful communicator. And so I went to a meetup and spoke with Vitalik about Ethereum for a while. He sent me the white paper. I read it that night, and it seemed to be a system that could enable average software developers to basically identify their own problems and build their own decentralized application solutions. So we're talking millions of software developers versus what was then going on in the space. It was the space was focusing on Bitcoin 2.0 architectures, where you actually needed to be an extreme specialist, or I call them a protocol priest, in order to add a new use case to a blockchain system. So Vitalik's insight was to separate the protocol layer from the application layer, and the protocol priests could keep improving the protocol layer, but at the application layer, millions of software developers could use tools that we and others ended up building essentially build decentralized applications as easily as they build web or mobile applications now. And so I got excited about that as much as I was excited about Bitcoin a few years earlier, and stayed close to the project over the next couple of weeks.
And you invested a lot of money. Eventually invested a lot of your own money into the currency.
Did I?
You did. Didn't you?
I did.
That's what your Wikipedia page says.
Oh, then it must be right.
It's not right. And do you use Coinbase at all? You look at
I've used Coinbase very sparsely over the years.
How do you manage your currencies?
I don't really do very much with cryptocurrency. We mostly build software.
So it's not true that you're like, your Wikipedia page also says you're a billionaire because you own so much.
Then it must be right.
So you're not commenting on that.
Well, it's not right, but it's it not must right. be because it's the Wikipedia. Internet.
Huh? Okay, so it's not right. Okay. I'm trying to like find a different angle than all the previous.
That's discussion. Definitely a different angle.
okay, but can you comment a little bit on your experience that you made here in Europe? I mean, you lived in Switzerland for a while. Why was it important?
Well, it was important for us to establish in Switzerland, because at that point in time, Bitcoin had a much worse rap than it has even today, and throughout history. So cryptocurrencies weren't really invented with Bitcoin. There were centralized cryptocurrencies for a couple decades before that. They were all based on servers. So David Shome built something called eCash or DigiCash, and Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse actually built out some of that technology for a while, and regulators didn't like non-central banks creating currencies. So that ended up running into problems, and other attempts to create different kinds of currencies that were not state-issued currencies also ran into problems. So we weren't trying to build a cryptocurrency. We were trying to build a decentralized application platform that would have a crypto fuel. You use Ether, the crypto fuel, to pay for computation and storage on the platform. But it sure looked a lot like cryptocurrency, and it's actually, if you think about it, it's a much better cryptocurrency than Bitcoin, because it's much cheaper to use, it's much more programmable, and you have to wait seconds versus many minutes in order to get transactions done.
It seems to be one of the very few that now like are there to stay. In my mind, I mean, from an external perspective, it seems to be one of the biggest market capitalization, and also like one that's always mentioned as a long-term project.
Yeah, it does seem that Bitcoin and Ethereum are considered the solid and number one, number two in people's minds.
Was it only the product that brought you there, or was it, I mean, there's so many projects out there in the world, so many people working on similar things, or things that at least look similar. How did you manage, I mean, I assume you have a very strong product, but beyond that, how did you manage to like get into that position where you're like one of the leading players in that segment?
We worked really hard okay. for a very long time.
Yeah, but that's
So it's been a bunch of years, and it's a powerful set of ideas and a very good initial implementation. And it's just we're sort of still in phase one of our ecosystem, where we built this base trust layer, but it's not very scalable right now. And phase two has started. Many applications are building on layer two technology so that we can do hundreds and thousands of transactions per second. I guess all I can say is it's a bunch of good ideas, well executed by extremely passionate people who are not just focused on the technology, but the philosophical or societal implications.
But I mean, to get that many people, like not only from the core nucleus of people that are like working that industry day by day, but there's even people in our office, friends of mine, who have a completely different day job, that all of a sudden now care about what you do and want to invest in what you do. And I wonder how you like gain that global traction, that global reach, that all of a sudden people from here in Hamburg that sit and work in a creative agency all of a sudden talk about
you. So why do you think they care? Why do you care?
I mean, the general idea, I think, is that they care because they see something new coming up there. They see like a technology that might revolutionize the world in a way. But then again, there's so many of them out there that have the same appeal and have the same...
In the blockchain space?
I would think so.
Okay, yeah. So there are thousands of crypto currencies that have been created, some for selfish purposes, some exploring some niche of the solution space. There are many projects that consider themselves Ethereum killers or Ethereum replacements.
Exactly. How did you like pierce through all of them? How did you like become the one that's surviving or like the strongest?
We were first.
Yeah, is that just first mover advantage?
Massive first mover advantage. And the Ethereum project has also attracted the best and the brightest. So it's been growing exponentially for much longer than any other project. There's it is orders of magnitude bigger than anything other than Bitcoin.
Did you ever advertise for that? Did you ever like, I mean, you're coming to conferences here in Germany. I assume that
this is advertising.
I know, but that's for a very like niche audience here. Like, I don't know, 100 people sitting here. But did you ever like?
We do things that make sense. We don't put billboards up on highways. We do education. We show up at events.
PR.
Sure.
And when was the moment that you realized, whoa, that thing is like gaining huge momentum? That's like bigger than maybe myself and bigger. I'm working on the related. What's that?
It's growing exponentially, so it happens very regularly.
Okay, so that was like early on. You noticed, okay, this is an exponential growth. I have to stick with that. That's rare.
I think right at the start, the people who were passionate about the project knew that they had to stick with it because it pretty much had to have profound implications. It's such a powerful set of ideas that I didn't see any way that it wouldn't succeed.
Aside from the currency, I mean, you're focused on the dApps, so on the apps of the platform, in my words. Which one of these apps is like the one that you believe in the most right now?
So the most important project right now, and maybe for quite a while, Ethereum is obviously an important project, but at the application layer, we have a project that is going live right now. It's in a token launch. It's a project for sustainable and ethical journalism. It's called Civil. So it basically enables journalists to form newsrooms and attach themselves to the platform. And the platform itself has a constitution that specifies what it is to be an ethical journalist or an ethical newsroom. If you want to attach yourself to the platform, you have to post a security bond in the form of this Civil token. And you have to define a charter and indicate who the journalists are. And then you do your work. There are about 30 different newsrooms on the platform right now. It's growing pretty fast. And if you are found by your readers or your listeners to be acting unethically, then they can challenge your right to be on the platform. They can, if they win the challenge, then they can take your security bond.
So it's, you're fixing journalism in a way.
We hope to positively impact journalism.
Yes. What else would you like to fix? Or what else do you think is fixable the easiest with your platform?
Blockchain is really good for automating trust, guaranteeing execution of agreements or other kinds of systems. It's really good for building shared, trustworthy, collaborative infrastructure. It's very good for enabling content creators or service providers or resource providers to directly access their consumers without a big intermediary sucking all the value in. So we have another project called the Ujo Music Platform, which has a few hundred artists that establish their presence on the blockchain, upload content using a project called Open Law. They can attach usage policies to the content, so you can get a public performance license or streaming or derivative works license or synchronization license, and essentially consumers or other artists can come along and license the music in real time, and the artist gets paid in real time, which is very different from how that industry works right now, where the big intermediary, the music company, takes 70% of the value and doesn't make payments for months or sometimes years later.
Which of the two do you think is in the end going to be bigger? Is it the crypto aspect, the whole currency aspect of the platform, or is it the true blockchain and the apps aspect of everything?
So money is a small segment of our society. Financial services, financial products are a bigger aspect, but the economy is much bigger than the financial industry. So I think cryptocurrencies will be a narrow aspect of what gets done on blockchains. There will be so many different kinds of crypto assets. We already have crypto fuels and crypto commodities and crypto bonds. I think Daimler Benz and some banks have already put bonds on the Ethereum platform. So there will be that financial industry infrastructure, but I do believe that much of society will be built on blockchain systems and other decentralized protocols going forward. It'll take a while.
How many of the people that like get in touch with your products actually know that this second layer, or the apps layer, even exists? I mean,
it's just starting to get usable. So there are projects like Funfair and SpankChain that are using state channels technology. Other projects like Zombie, Battleground, Gods Unchained, and Axie Infinity, and a handful of others are gaming. Major League Baseball is doing interesting things. They're gaming technologies that are bringing their own scalability architectures.
And gambling as well.
For layer two. Yeah, there's some gambling, sure.
You like that?
I don't personally care about it.
But I mean, does it like...
It's an interesting use case for the technology, sure.
Okay. I mean, it seems like it might put the whole thing into the wrong corner a little bit.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Has gambling destroyed human civilization?
Not yet.
That's good.
Okay. Did you ever participate in ICO yourself?
Yeah. Braid the movie I participated in. It ended up going on to I think it had 5 showings at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's been at a few other film festivals and got picked up for distribution in theaters. And Civil. I just bought some Civil tokens.
So your own.
Yes, I'm trying to support that project and make sure we do whatever we can to make it successful.
Is it fair to say that Consys, your company, is an incubator?
We're a lot of different things. So we are a software company. We are a venture firm, venture investing firm. We're a consulting firm. We help our own projects token launch. We help third-party projects token launch. We do security audit on different software. We have accounting systems different companies are using.
But it's only 100 people. That's right, right?
It's 1,100.
It's 1,100 people. Okay, that makes sense then. Then, yeah, enough people for that. In the end, how would you describe the company? I mean, you do it.
I think I just did.
It's a
hybrid organization. It's a hybrid company. It's an oddly shaped company because we formed before we even had an ecosystem. We formed before the Ethereum platform was even publicly released. So we kind of had to build a lot of the infrastructure ourselves, and we started trying to build products, and we had to build developer tools and infrastructure, and we got lots of calls from companies and governments to explain what was going on, and ended up explaining and also building lots of software in consulting contexts.
You said that you think that blockchain will sort of be like Web 3.0, the new form of the web. What's wrong the most with the current state of the web? What would you change ideally if you could? What don't you like about the web the way it is today?
Well, I like the web very much. I like Web 2.0. It's incomplete in a sense. It doesn't have an appropriate identity construct, and our UPort project is a much better identity construct that will, over time, enable people to be in greater control of their personal information, to have greater agency on the internet in these open protocol-based open platforms and network business models, and enable people to be less productized and less exploited because they'll be in more control of their information.
You feel like the big companies that dominate the current web, the Google and Apple and Facebook, Amazon, the very, very big companies, do you perceive them as competitors to what you do? Is that competition?
Some of them are starting to pay attention to blockchain. They're not competitors currently.
But they could be.
You could be.
Okay, everybody could be in that sense.
Absolutely. Everybody will be at some point, or lots of technology companies will be competing in that blockchain context soon.
So what's your prediction on how is that whole world developing? I mean, it's like let's maybe take Facebook or Google. Should they be scared of what you do?
I think they should be scared of what they do. So they are great companies with great people. They're not trying to do harm. They follow business models that and they are corporations, so they are legally constrained to try to make as much money for their shareholders as possible within the constraints of the law. But a negative externality is that they are addicting people and exploiting people and damaging people. And there's a discussion going on right now in around the world and in the Silicon Valley Bay Area, and they're going to have to revise their business model somewhat. I think they'll still be able to sell advertising, but they're going to have to do it more ethically. They may have to. There's this notion circulating that there should be something like a fiduciary responsibility for people that are custodying personal information and making money off of personal information, similar to how money managers have a responsibility not to exploit their customers.
So do you think there's already applications somewhere visible in your perspective that might replace certain services that the big companies offer today?
Blockchain's an amazing technology, and lots of very useful things are being built for a small subset of the population, but it's not scalable enough to support big social networks yet. It will get there. We could potentially build a social network on top of the civil platform. One of the directions for it is to enable discourse amongst the readers and listeners based on the hopefully very accurate information that they're encountering on the platform.
Is that going to be like the project for you for the rest of your life? Are you going to be like, is that what you do? Probably like pushing that platform, pushing the development, and is that the job that I don't know you do?
I've no plans or interest in exiting the space, but I don't know the future.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that's the end of the marathon for you today. Thank you for doing this and for my unusual questions. Sorry for that.
Ja, das waren Joseph und Philipp von der Next. Das Programm ging direkt danach auf der Konferenz weiter. Deswegen ist dieser Podcast jetzt mal ein bisschen kürzer geworden. Sonst ist der Joseph eigentlich auch ein bisschen gesprächiger. Ich vermute, an dem Tag hat er einfach schon sehr viele Termine gehabt. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet trotzdem Spaß mit der Folge und konntet was mitnehmen. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Bis bald. Ciao.